and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 481. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me again this week is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
Dan is away at Resd this week. It's been quite busy in terms of stuff going on in the industry because A, you get Resd, and that inevitably leads into the BAFTAs. Do you follow all the awards business, Matthew?
I do try to keep up as much as I can. I didn't intend on watching it last night, but it popped up on my Twitter feed, and then an hour and a half later, I'd realised I'd watched it all. So, Dara O'Brien was the compere, and I enjoyed some of his jokes.
Because he is one of the few people in the like stand-up comic world or whatever who is a legit actual gaming nerd. He's a science boy, and he actually games himself, and so it's not that kind of faux pretending to be cool. I've been to a couple of things. I went to a few of the GMA awards when this show was nominated and a few other things, and they'll get a presenter, and there has been some truly orc presenting going on from people who clearly have no idea what the event is or what games are or do.
No, I thought Dara did a good job. No, yeah, as you said, he's a proper gamer. I was laughing at the thought because he was saying basically a couple of weeks before BAFTA came to him and gave him all the games and was like, oh, just, you know, just make your way through this.
Yeah, that's tricky, because if you are doing something to do with, for example, movies and you're an Oscar person, yes, you get thrown a bunch of screeners as part of the Academy, for example. You have to watch a whole load of screeners. But there is a finite, well, this is going to be like 90 minutes to 2 hours per thing. Whereas games, yes, are this anywhere between 10 to 100 hour investment to get like to actually get a real feel for what the game is about and everything. And it's sort of impossible. Although, with the mobile games, it does make it a little bit easier, which is obviously what we're going to be focusing on here. We've got the big mobile winners from the BAFTA Games Awards to share with you today, along with some more information about the Apple Arcade. A bunch more trailers have been released, and we've taken a good hard look at some of the ones that we think are the most promising. We've also got new releases, including the likes of Photographs, Rolando Royal Edition, Cultist Simulator, and more. Plus, a slightly belated look at The Elder Scrolls Blades. Both Matthew and I have now played it, and we can share our impressions and concerns in just a bit. But first, the news. So I kept half an eye on the BAFTAs last night. You were watching it in full. I saw that God of War, is that the game of the year?
Yeah, it cleaned up. It got 5 awards.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that did very well. I'm actually midway through playing God of War. It is quite good.
Yes, it is pretty incredible. I played it the first weekend it came out, and I can't stop thinking about it.
It's a very different beast from what came before it. Like, it's an entirely other game, and it does feel like it slid more into that, I don't know, Last of Us, as it was called, Dad of War, that sort of grumpy old parent learning stuff from his child and experiencing feelings along the way and all of that. But the combat does feel good and the set pieces are impressive, so fair play to it.
Boy, have you got sick of that yet?
Yeah. However, mobile stuff. So the first thing that we'll mention is the EE Mobile Game of the Year gong, which is one of the only awards in the ceremony that's voted for by people, the actual public, rather than industry luminaries. And the winner for this one was Old School RuneScape Mobile.
Yeah.
I don't know if... Did you play the original RuneScape? Do you play this new version or this new mobile version of the old version, I suppose?
I didn't. I've never played RuneScape, but I've had friends who swear by it, and it was their jam as a kid. And some of them still play it still.
Yeah, they're mad for it. And this came out, I think, late last year or earlier this year, whatever. We did a video for it, and it's very weird to step into having not played the original game. Because it really is like going back in time 10, 15 years, and when you try and play it, as I did, on an iPhone, maybe not the ideal interface because it's so very teeny tiny. Ideally, play it on an iPad or something like that. But I think this one won because the fan base is so strong. I can see this one being a case of just like the RuneScape community is incredibly passionate and they will have been bothered to roll up and vote for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've done well to beat out stiff competition from the likes of like Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Pokemon Go, Clash Royale, like big names, Fortnite, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So fair play, but that just speaks to their community. And it's been a game that's been going on for like, you know, well over a decade, and that doesn't happen to most games. You don't get something running that long if there isn't something to it, if you haven't done something right, and if you don't service your community and look after them properly. So fair play to Jagex for winning that one. There is a mobile game of the year that was voted on by the actual industry itself. This one was won by Florence. Kraken, have you played it?
Yes, loved it. It was one of my game of the years last year. I think, yeah, it's debatably one of my favourite games of all time, to be honest. I think it's amazing. You know, it uses every minute to its maximum because it's only 45 minutes long, but every minute of that is just superb. And so, yeah, I was super thrilled to see that one.
But is it a game, Matthew?
Oh, well, that's the question. Yeah, it is a game. It is an experience game, but I think that's the question with games these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a game for what it's worth, but it is one of those things that's very experiential, as you say, and people criticise it when it came out, going, well, it's half an hour and you don't do anything, you barely interact with it. And it's like, yeah, true, but it uses the medium effectively. There are some games, some of the walking simulators, as they're called, for example, some of which I really, really like, but some of which I feel like this could easily just have just been a film. There is no real benefit to you using the medium of video games, which is primarily an interactive medium. That's the thing that video games has going for it over a movie or over a book or something. It's the idea, well, you can interact with it. You are the protagonist and you can affect the game world and you can make inputs and stuff. So if your game doesn't have any inputs, if your game doesn't have any way for you to affect the world beyond effectively triggering bits of speech or triggering text boxes or something, why aren't you just watching a movie which will have better pacing? Because the designer can't control the pacing in a walking sim because you could just stand in one place for 15 minutes and do nothing and then lose the flow or the momentum of the story that's supposed to be told.
I think it's how it uses the music as well. I know you could argue that for the film aspect, but the point is you're supposed to put your headphones in and get immersed in this world on your phone. And I think the point of that being able to take that anywhere, it's that good where you could play this game literally on the train and be immersed in that world as opposed to being sat on your couch.
Yeah, and it felt very intimate, and yeah, I did feel like it was a rewarding little playthrough, so fair play. Game innovation and family was Nintendo Labo.
Yes.
So the industry is responding to the cardboard assembly business, which is kind of cool. I still yet to play the damn thing. This dovetails into another news story, which is about Nintendo Labo not being used for its own internal little games and those apps that are released to coincide with the cardboard builds. But that new Nintendo Labo VR thing, there's been an announcement that that's going to be compatible with some actual pre-existing proper Nintendo games. Which are the two?
So yeah, it's coming to Super Mario Odyssey and Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Legend of Zelda VR.
Basically, yeah.
That sounds like fascinating when they announce that. That sounds like a huge deal. Like, how have they converted that into being a VR game? Are they going to make it first person? What have they changed? And watching the trailer that Nintendo put out via its Twitter feed, what it actually more looks like is you just put the VR goggly bits on and it makes the game 3D.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting how they've got VR to work with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, but they haven't got it fully to work with Super Mario Odyssey, because Odyssey only has three levels which you can basically try out with the VR. So you've got the Cap Kingdom, the Seaside Kingdom, and the Luncheon Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Breath of the Wild is the whole game.
Maybe those Mario ones are like custom levels designed for VR? Is that what it is? Or are they just literally allowing you access to three of them and not the rest of it?
They're three existing levels that came with it, yeah. So they've just decided these three are more capable.
Bit weird. All right. But I mean, we'll have to like reserve judgment till we actually try it, but from the look of things, it doesn't look like they've converted Breath of the Wild into VR in the same way that, for example, Skyrim did. There is a VR version of Skyrim which you can play first person, fully VR, moving your head around, all that business. It looks like from the trailer that it's just going to be like playing it on the 3DS when you turn 3D mode on, only you're playing it with goggles.
Yeah, unsure until we try it out. But I think there's a little bit more to it. But yeah, it's holding the actual unit up to your head and how's that going to work and everything. But yeah. I think it is a huge move for Nintendo, and I think it will actually push a lot of units of Labo VR because of it. I've looked this morning at how much Labo VR, and you can pick one up for about £35 just for the base unit. And I'm very tempted just to try these two out.
I'm just super suspicious of the technical aspect. Like, if you're having to hold it with one hand, that's massively limiting unless they put a strap. And I'm going to assume that the screen part of the Nintendo Switch doesn't have an accelerometer in it, in the same way that I know that the two Joy-Cons do. But if it doesn't have an accelerometer in it, then it means you can't just turn your head around and look around and have that actually affect the view, affect the perspective of what you're seeing. So it will just be like, you know, gluing a TV to your face and it'll have no interaction beyond, oh, it all looks 3D now. And I'm much less interested in that. That takes away a lot of the point of VR for me.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's baby steps, though. And obviously, it shows Nintendo are looking to invest more in VR, and it shows that they're taking it more seriously.
Yeah, see how they go. Well, Game Beyond Entertainment, that's another category, was My Child Lebensborn. That was the mobile game that won that. So I think the category is there to reflect games which are actually trying to make some kind of statement or suggest something wider about the culture. And My Child Lebensborn's a good example of that. I don't know if you came into contact with this one.
I didn't, no.
No, so it's a game about you kind of looking after a child in, it's like post-war, I think it's post-war Germany. I can't remember exactly where it's located.
I thought it was Norway. I think it
might be Norway, yeah. And you're German in Norway. And yeah, it's effectively you looking after this child, and it's quite bleak and harrowing, and you're just trying to keep him happy. And it's like, it almost uses like virtual pet mechanics in terms of trying to look after the kid. But obviously it's a child, not a bloody Tamagotchi. And so, yeah, you get quite attached, and it can be quite tricky, and it can also be quite, you know, problematic and grim at times. So it's making an interesting point and doing it quite well through game mechanics. So that's well worthy of a win. Debut game was Yoku's Island Express, which I've been nowhere near. That's a Switch game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's on all consoles, I think, and PC, I believe.
Okay, so I've got no clue what that's about. I should probably look into it if it's winning awards.
I've dabbled with it a little bit. It's like a pinball mechanic game where you're looking after Yoku. So he's a little insect. I can't remember what insect he is. I think he's like a beetle or something.
Okay. And evolving game is Fortnite. No surprise there. It's the big live service game, and Fortnite had to win something, didn't it? And it counts as mobile, kind of. So there's your rundown there. Now, moving away from the BAFTA award winners, we talked about Apple Arcade and Google Stadia last week and announced the fact that Apple had dropped a bunch of information, a big list of titles of what they were going to be releasing as part of their initial run. So we've taken a closer look at some of the trailers that have been released then and subsequently from Apple Arcade and picked out a few of the ones that we think look most interesting. So we've got Atone, Heart of the Elder Tree. This really reminded me of Capybara's style. I don't know if you've played any of the Capybara games, like Sword and Sorcery.
I've seen them.
It's pixel art, but it's like everyone has been stretched vertically. So everyone's got huge long legs and very skinny bodies and everything, but the art is very low res and lo-fi. And this is very similar to that artistically. And it has that indie game feel. And that's something that I've noticed throughout these trailers, that the games that Apple appears to have picked for its arcade service are what I would describe as the indie, noodly, twinkly music stuff that, I'm not going to lie, appeals to me massively. But they haven't gone for a whole bunch of like card games or anything. It's very deliberately the stuff that looks good in a trailer that appeals to the beard strokey arty crowd, for better
sort
or
of
worse.
Sort stands out from the crowd, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, but it just like they're going for a specific tone, it seems, because everything they've released fits into this gap, and they feel like not awards bait games, but you know what I mean? That Monument Valley Zen chill floaty feel to them. And this one is a prime example of that. So you're playing as Estra is the name. And the idea is that you are trying to protect the Elder Tree, which is being protected by the gods. And you have to go around trying to look after it. You're trying to find the tree itself. And then in the process, you discover stuff about your family history and dead father. And it all sounds quite Disney in that sense. But the trailer, very nice to look at. As I say, very Capybara games. It looks like there's a bit of rhythm action going on there. There are bits where you're having to tap, and it almost looks a little bit Guitar Hero when you're doing fights.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. Atone, Heart of the Elder Tree is the full name of that one. There's also Pathless, which is from the folks who did Abzu. Did you play Abzu?
I tried it out. I didn't play the full game.
I was a big fan of this one, because that was the game where you're effectively just swimming through a massive ocean and navigating this like weird aquatic, sunken, Atlantis-esque thing.
Yeah, was that Ubisoft?
I don't know if they published it, but the team behind it's Giant Squid.
Okay.
And for me, it felt very much in keeping with things like Journey.
Flower, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You're not killing things or collecting coins or anything like that. You're just traveling through the world. But it's, again, floaty, indie, noodly, pretty colours, like twinkly music. It's all that same vibe. This one, you appear to be this archer who's charging around a world with an eagle in tow, which is always handy if you've got one lying around.
Eagles are in. Assassin's Creed had one.
There's that VR game that's coming out, which is all about looking after birds, which I'm massively up for. I think it's out this week, actually. I wish I could remember the name of it. But it looks really cool, and I totally want to go. There have been beautiful videos floating around where you know, if you're in VR, you're holding it in your hand, and then you're teaching it tricks and setting it to fly off. And I want that. I want my own owl. But this one appears to be much more locked down. So from the bits that look like actual gameplay, It almost feels like you've got a third-person perspective camera. You're running through these forests, these dark forests with these creatures which glow in video game fashion on what I assume are going to be the sensitive bits. And then you have to try and destroy them. So there's a good shot of you like running alongside a creature. And it looks like the running is on rails. And what you have to do is choose when to fire your arrows and where to fire them. Looks lovely.
Like, it does.
Properly impressive art style.
Yeah, I'm just watching the trailer now. It does look beautiful. There seems to be a lot to it as well, like lots of lands, different ones. You're going into a volcano at one point by the looks of it.
And I wouldn't expect anything less from the folks who did Abzu, because that game is visually fantastic. They use the language of colour, not to sound too wanky, but the way that they use colour in that game was fantastic in order to draw your eye to certain bits at certain times and creating that sense of things being underwater and that diffuse lighting and everything. It was a glorious little thing.
It actually looks a bit like Breath of the Wild when you think about it. More the gameplay, the arrows and everything like that, and taking on these big monsters.
But also it's not doing a photorealistic like recreation of a wood. It's very, very stylized. It's very deliberately like block colors, and the characters are all not quite cel-shaded, but, you know, they very simple designs that are animated in 3D. I'm probably most interested in this just because I'm a big fan of that studio, so fair play to them. Where Cards Fall is also going to be appearing. And that looks really interesting from a design perspective. So it's like isometric style that you would see in something like Lara Croft Go or Hitman Go or something like that. Okay. Only it's a full world, so it's a big map that you're looking at. But the idea is you direct cards from the top of the screen, from the sky effectively, to fall down onto specific parts of the world where you want them. And then you tap them, and these cards then assemble themselves into buildings and structures. And this creates worlds and creates environments for your little main character to wander into and then start engaging with people. Or they might create, for example, walkways that allow you to traverse bits of the level by walking across the roofs of these buildings. And then once you're done with them, I think you can take that stack of cards down and then maybe place it somewhere else on the map and build another structure. Again, muted indie tones and a title font that looks like it's been done in chalk and all the things you'd expect from that kind of game. But the actual dropping of the cards and then them suddenly assembling themselves into building is beautiful. It's so nicely done. Everything just kind of flutters out and expands and suddenly becomes this little shop or this little school or something like that. Really nice touch. I have to see how it plays, but again, you can see that they've picked things that look good in trailers. Now, there's also one from the Cannibal creator, which is Overland, which is what Dan was talking about last week. Yep. That game where you're wandering around and it's got sort of XCOM-y things, but they're based around incidents.
And the rock jellyfish.
And the rock jellyfish, of course, you can forget. So these are all like worth looking forward to, we think. So you can see all these trailers, by the way, in a little article that we put up. Harry's done it for PG. So if you want to go and see what any of these things actually look like, we're interested to see where this goes. Out and about this week, and technically last week, really, because we're starting with The Elder Scrolls Blades. Now, we mentioned at the end of the last podcast that despite having applied for access to it, we hadn't got any. Naturally, the moment we pressed stop pretty much on the podcast, we all got access. So, sigh. But also, we can talk about it now, so that's a good thing. So there's a video up for this on PG if you want to see me play through the first quest of the game. And also, we've done loads of walkthrough bits and tips and tricks and how to get through the game quickly and how to sort of speed up your progress, because there is some distinctly mobile shenanigans going on in this game that are holding it back, I think, from being as good as it could be. So from your experience with the game, you said you've played a few hours, like, what have you found it to be so far? Firstly, how familiar are you with The Elder Scrolls in general?
Not that familiar. I mean, I obviously know the behemoth that is Skyrim. It's part of gaming culture, isn't it? So it's hard to avoid. I've only ever experienced probably an hour at a friend's house when I was young. But okay. I've never been the sort of medieval gaming guy. I've always been more futuristic. So gotcha. I'm more Fallout than Elder Scrolls, if you see what I mean. It was interesting jumping in. So it's first person, obviously, free-to-play action adventure. The controls are interesting. So you hold and release to swing the sword. And it seems to be built on lots of dungeons. So you've got a quest, you'll be put in a dungeon and you'll be taking on enemies one by one.
Yeah. Sometimes you get ganked. I got ganked by rats.
Yeah, or orcs or whatever creatures. But yeah, and then you go back to your hometown and then sort of like a building simulator. You're creating your town and bringing it back from ruins by the sounds of it. And there was an evil witch or something, I believe. I don't know if that was right.
There was something about that at the beginning, but I think it's all pretty arbitrary, to be honest with you. Well, let's start with the good stuff, which is that it does very much look like the Elder Scrolls universe. You say you've mostly focused on things like Fallout, but I mean, Fallout is just a reskin of Skyrim. It's all using that same Bethesda engine. Those Bethesda games all kind of feel the same.
It is.
And this does feel like one of them. So when you dive in, it looks very Oblivion-y / Skyrim-y. Yeah. And the controls are actually quite nicely handled. I think I was playing in landscape mode, though I think you can do portrait too if you want. The options are touch on the floor to move where you want to go, and it will just do that pathfinding thing. Mm-hmm. Or you can use dual floating sticks in the corners if you want. Or you can also drag around the top of the screen, and it does much more of like a one-to-one mouse control. So I found myself kind of doing the diagonal control where I'm moving around with my left and then like looking around at the top of the screen. That seems to do the trick. And as you say, combat's very stripped down and simple, just tap and hold and release, tap, hold and release. There are defensive options and spells that get added as well. I understand these being a concession for mobile and making it much more simple, and I think that's a good idea because, as I say in the video, when it comes to Skyrim and especially Oblivion, like, the combat was never the strong point of those games.
No.
The hand-to-hand melee has always been a bit awkward and not great. You're more into it for the RPG aspect and the world building and the exploration, which is where this thing starts to fall down a bit, because the way that the quests are structured is that you go out and do a quest, you'll get some gear, you get some gold, maybe get some lumber and stuff, and then you come back, as you say, to your little home base. And this is essentially a village that's been sacked and you're trying to rebuild it. So you start by rebuilding the town hall and you're using the lumber you've got from your first quest. And every time you come back, you'll be able to maybe build a little bit more of it. And if you've played mobile games before, going off and doing little sort of randomly generated missions while then building back a home base somewhere, that's most mobile games, actually. So those little city builder things where you just have to come back and grow your theme park or grow your... You know, it's not a million miles away from your Simpsons Tapped Out in that regard, where you're just constantly expanding the number of things you have on the map.
Yeah, no, I get that. It sort of takes away a bit from what Bethesda's known for and everything.
Yeah, and so playing through the couple of quests at the beginning, you go, okay, this feels okay, this feels quite good. The problem is when it comes to the chests, and it's quite aggressive with its monetization. And that's the biggest problem that I've encountered so far, where it really is gatekeeping, where you have to, you know, unlock chests, and these chests need to be placed in slots, and you have a limited number of slots in order to unlock them. So you either have to wait for hours and hours at a time, or you can use gems to unlock the chests quicker and free up the space. And that's what the game is trying to get you to do, and ultimately get you to spend real money on gems so you can accelerate it. Because Dave Aubrey, who's been doing a lot of the guides for us, he's played it a lot, and he's gotten up to the point in the game where he's hit that wall. You need to spend so many gems where either I'm going to have to grind for 2 weeks just to get one advancement, or I'm going to need to start dropping real money. And that is always grim when it hits, and it's a shame because it's not what the Elder Scrolls has ever been about. And it's stuff like this, I feel, that gives the mobile gaming world a bit of a bad rep.
No, I know what you mean. What was the Fallout mobile game that came out?
Fallout was Fallout Shelter.
Fallout Shelter. Did that utilize a lot of sort of in-app purchases and all that?
It had free-to-play aspects, yeah, totally. But it was a lot less aggressive with its microtransactions. You could play that game for a long time without spending any money and still feel like you were making progress. And that's the balance with free-to-play games. Like, yes, of course, you could spend a ton of cash and complete the game much, much quicker. But there is this element of, what if you don't spend any money? Is the game still playable? Is it still worth a damn? Or does it just become too frustrating at a certain point? And then you churn, and then the game loses those players for good. And that's always what you're running the risk of. There are games like Fortnite, for example, which you can play for free no matter what, for however long you like.
Mm.
And then if you want to spend money on additional things or cosmetics, that's fine. And that's what Clash Royale did, to its credit. Like, Clash Royale is a game that you can pick up and you can play for however long you want. You can play as many games as you like. There's no energy system. It doesn't force you to wait to recharge and play again the next day after you've played three matches or something, which some games do. So it's very generous in that regard, but it balances that with monetizing certain aspects, which people are more than happy to do, and then it makes $1 billion. Not all games can do that. Not all games are going to be like a brand new genre, effectively, which is what Clash Royale was. But with this thing, I don't feel like they're capitalizing on what makes The Elder Scrolls so popular.
No, I totally get that. I mean, it is a fine line you've got to walk with monetization and all that. And I think, I'm hoping, since it's in early access, Bethesda will see some of the feedback and maybe adjust.
Yeah, so we mentioned that in the video as well, but Bethesda, if they behave themselves, what they'll do is they'll look at the feedback and they will maybe step back a little bit on the microtransactions, because the early beta is all about balancing this stuff.
Mm.
The problem is that the core of the game is still built around unlocking those loot boxes to make progress, so I don't think they can pull that out of the game, or nor would they want to, because let's face it, they're hoping to make money from it. There's also the other aspect, which is that the levels, I've played a bunch of them. I'm pretty sure that they are randomly generated. So these are randomly generated dungeons throwing out quests. So you then lose that other aspect of what makes those games compelling, which is a kind of central narrative.
Yeah, the storyline that, you know, 1 minute you just encounter someone random, then you're going on a mission that you tell about your friends for days.
So without that, it feels like it just becomes much more of a generic, random RPG-esque thing. And then you're relying on the mechanics to prop it up. You're relying on the combat to be fun, rather than I'm playing through these levels or I'm exploring these dungeons because I need to get a certain artifact which will unlock a new branch of the story for me, and then I can go further. So when you take away a compelling central story, it does have a story, don't get me wrong, but when you take away that whole idea of the dungeons themselves being structured according to the story and it's just like random corridors put together with some loot at the end of it, it's like, I don't know. I'm not sure about this.
Mm.
So
we'll see. Can I ask what character you went for?
I'm a dark elf mage, because of course I am. No, sorry, high elf. I'm not dark elf mage. I'm high elf mage. But I will always choose magic user if given the option. That is clearly what I was born to be. Same for the sci-fi as well. So I'll always be, is it an adept in Mass Effect?
With games, I sort of try and pick someone the closest resembling me. So try and, you know, actually pick myself as opposed to like a big dragon bastard, as you would. I went for a Nord, which I found out is a strong and stubborn, exceptional warrior. So I was pretty pleased with that.
You like that, do you?
It's worth noting that Elder Scrolls Blades has actually reached 1 million downloads within its first week of release.
I am not surprised. And that's like just from an invite-only beta.
Yeah.
So it would be way, way, way more than that if they had like just taken the shackles off it and let everybody else get access to it. But it was always going to be massive. You're always going to have that massive initial spike. They don't have to worry on proper launch day about getting, you know, 5-6 million downloads within the first weekend. That's not a problem for them. Mm. The problem is going to be how many people stick around and how many people churn and bail on it because they become quickly disappointed with what they've been given. So it's the tale that I'm interested in from them. They're going to have some great launch stats that they'll publish, but I'm not so interested in that. Let's see how it does long term. Can still, I think, apply for access to it like we did. So if you do want to get in on it early, and we will couch everything that we've just said in the fact that it is a beta, things will change. So we're not doing a proper review of it yet. We've done lots of coverage, but we can't review it. It's not finished. So bear that in mind. Now, moving on from that, out and about properly this week, let's start with Photographs, which is an unusual narrative-driven game which is based around taking photos of parts of a story. And there are three parts of this. No, there are five parts, I should say, of this story. And each bit of this story, which takes about half an hour to play through, contains completely different mechanics. So it's a weird thing of like five different games in one with these slightly interconnected tales, which take very unusual and slightly dark twists throughout it. Have you had a look at this at all?
No, I'm just watching the trailer now.
I really took to it. I agree with Harry on this one. I think that the puzzles themselves are a little bit... they're not as refined as they could be, put it okay. that way. But I don't think it's to the detriment of the game, because the core of the puzzles is really interesting. And the puzzles themselves are telling the story. That's what's unique and interesting about this one. So if the first little part of the narrative is about this father and his daughter, I think maybe a grandfather and his adopted daughter, and they're building this shop and they have a little setup which is kind of out in the forest, and bits of the narrative are told through photographs and little pop-ups, and then it will suddenly switch to a little bit of gameplay, and that gameplay is represented by two little icons on a grid. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to move them around by swiping. And when you swipe, you move both characters simultaneously around this grid. And you need to slot them into their respective silhouettes, which are, you know, in different places on this grid. And so it's one of those games where you swipe and they just move and in the direction you swipe until they hit a wall. It starts off very, very simple. And then at some point, something happens to the daughter, to the girl. And that affects the way in which she moves around the board and the places in which she can go. And suddenly there are areas she can't go into anymore. And there are items that she can't pick up because they hurt her. So it's a really interesting way. And it's told piecemeal. So it's like a bit of story, then a bit of gameplay, bit of story, bit of gameplay. And one informs the other in a way that does genuinely work organically and helps reinforce what the story is saying. And then in between that, you've got the option to, or you have to, take photographs. So it becomes a hidden object game briefly, okay. where you tap the screen and you're moving around the side of these buildings that are kind of cut in cross section, so you can see the characters inside. And there'll be a little clue written at the bottom, which is, you know, indicative of the thing you should be looking for. So you have to find that and then take a photo, and that prompts the next bit of the story to begin. And it does this in five completely different stories with five completely different mechanics. So one of them feels a bit Angry Birds, where you're pinging stuff around a screen. And another one is much more like a color matching game. But again, it's telling the story through the color matching rather than it just being random and arbitrary. It's a really interesting little experiment in storytelling, and one that I think works very, very well. I do think that the puzzles are the weakest part of it.
Mm.
But I think they do the job. They work very well in communicating the story and the feeling and the emotion of what's going on.
How long is it to play? Because did you say you played the whole thing?
You'll do it in like 2.5 hours, really, because okay. it's like about 30 minutes per chapter, and there are five in total. So you can push through it fairly quickly. But we think it's good. We're genuinely interesting, worth your time, quite unusual. And I should say, these are the guys behind You Must Build a Boat, and I forget if it's 1 million. That game won, you know, 1,000,000.
Okay, yeah.
Which are big games for mobile. They're really interesting little developer.
It's 88 games, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's quite a departure for them. And we think it's really worth your time. So Photographs is the name of that one. Video review up on the YouTube channel. And Harry's written one too. What else have we got? Oh, yeah. We talked about it, I think, a week or two ago. Rolando Royal Edition.
It's a remaster, isn't it, this one? Which we had a big topic about.
That's right. So this is the remaster. Played it. It's good. It's good in so much as it's Rolando. And Rolando is good. It's just got prettier graphics now. Can't really say anything bad about it. The negatives are that it doesn't feel particularly new anymore. It's a game that uses mechanics that were like, wow, 10 years ago. Because we didn't know what an accelerometer was back then. And so the idea you could tilt to roll little characters around the screen was like, this is totally new and cool. And now we've done it a million times. So there is like, yeah, okay, fine.
Starting to show its age sort of thing.
Yeah. It's not going to have the wow factor or the impact that it did back then. But that doesn't stop the remaster being nicely done. It's very well presented. It's got that Little Big Planet look to it now, 2.5D.
Yep.
And it still feels good. The gameplay does feel nice. I've enjoyed the time playing with it. I don't think it's going to blow anyone away.
Nice and colourful.
Very colourful. But yeah, you can see the comparison. I did a bit of the old... I found like the original AppSpy review, so way before my time. they reviewed it back when they used to put a camera over the top of a phone and record video that way before actual capture for mobile.
Right.
So it's a nice little blast from the past. So you can see it running in the video there. But also check out the review. I think we gave it 7 or 8 out of 10. It's good. It's good stuff, but don't go in expecting like to be blown away necessarily. Now, you did a review, your first review for PG this week, didn't you, of a Switch game?
I did, yeah. So I got to review Mextermination Force.
I only saw the cool GIFs about this game.
Yeah, so to give you a quick overview, it's basically how I described it, Shadow of the Colossus meets Cuphead. And you could sort of think it's quite Contra-esque as well. It's a run-and-gun shooter where you're taking on these big mechs, basically known as Mega Mechs. All boss battles, there's 14 of them, and it's just thoroughly entertaining from start to finish. It's just a shame it's there's only 14 bosses, basically. I'd love 20 more.
So how long did it take you to push through?
To complete it,
yeah,
probably about 5-6 hours, maybe a little less. But
okay.
But you can't really complain for the price. I think it's $10.99. I think that was the price on the eShop when I checked. It's been 4 years in the making. There's a lot of love and care in it. The details and everything is cool. Every boss is pretty unique. One minute you're facing a gigantic robotic centipede that's known as a mechapede in the game. And then the next minute you're taking on a machine designed like a cowboy that's got razor sharp spurs and everything. Did you say you played Cuphead last week?
I did, yes.
Yeah, so you know halfway through a fight in Cuphead, it'll have different phases and it'll change it up.
Yeah, yeah, enemy bosses will switch into rage mode.
Yeah, it's got all that, which is cool. Like, one of them is you're fighting this giant lime green robot and then it'll just split in half and turn into a rampaging crocodile and chase you across bridges.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had a blast with it and I gave it a good review. I gave it 4 stars out of 5, which is a silver rating for us.
And the full name of that one again is?
Mextermination Force. So that came out today, I believe.
Nice one. All right, then. So you can get that right now. Also out this week on mobile, Cultist Simulator, the mobile version of the game that appeared last year, I think, on Steam. And has now made its way over to mobile. This is a card game which has a touch of the arcane about it. It's a little bit Cthulhu, which is something that I massively approve of. The game itself is an interesting one. Now, I've played this for about an hour or so, and I think it's weird or slightly tricky to make a judgment on it because it is kind of a narrative game, but it's based around just plonking you on an empty table with like a couple of cards and one little trigger button in the middle, which is like you tap it and it's got work written on it, for example. Mm-hmm. And you look at your cards, and maybe you've got two cards and one of them is like heart or passion or something like that at the bottom of the table. So you're like, all right, then I will drag my passion card or my heart card onto this work slot. And then it activates and you can press start and go. And a little timer starts counting down. And then at the end of it, once it's completed, you'll go back to that little button that you found on the table, open it up, and there will be two cards in. So you'll have got your heart card back, maybe, and now it will have produced another card that goes with it because of the 30-second work cycle. So you're like, okay, I put a card in, and I get more than one card out. And then another button pops up on the screen, and another over the course of time. And each of these buttons represent like different aspects of the game. So you're going to have things like dreams. So there's a dream element of it, and you're going to have study. And then the cards at the bottom of the screen, you've got stuff like A Smith's Secret and Directions to Moorlands and Reason with a big blinky eye on it. And like very abstract, some of them will be place names. Some of them will sound like physical items, like funds. There's a money card that you have to keep replenishing. But also like weird abstract things like, say, Reason or Terror or something like that. And the game is you working out what combination of cards to put into each different button section, if you like. So each of the different glyphs that appear. One of them is like research or study. And so you go, okay, then eventually you'll get a card that might be an actual place. So it will say like so-and-so's shop. And you'll be like, okay, if I drag that on, I can then study that location. And if I study that location, that might open up some information. And then you start getting cards which are people. So it'll produce an actual person, and then you can start talking to them. So it'll be like a little talk glyph will appear. So the board keeps kind of growing and expanding as you play, and more options start appearing on the board. And you can move them all around and create this little map, a mind map almost, of your cards and all the different glyphs and boards that you can drag your cards onto. And it's up to you to work out the different combinations and what will produce the best results. And every single time you do one of these little combinations, it's based on timers. So it becomes that resource management kind of game where you're looking at three or four different timers that are gradually counting down. And once that one's finished, you go there, you collect the resource, you get the cards, and then you can start putting them in. But by the time you've got maybe like 8 or 10 of these glyph things, it becomes really difficult to manage what goes where and who does what.
Sounds complicated.
It's weird. There's no tutorial
right
at all.
How easy is it to pick up then?
Well, relatively, it's weird because you can immediately start getting a feel for what it is. And I like games that do this where they're just like, go. And you're like, yeah. Sorry, what? Where am I? Huh? And then you just start dragging things around because you're a curious person and things start happening. And through the interactions, you work out what you're supposed to do. So I got a lot of time for games that respect the player to that degree where they're like, you'll work it out. It'll be fine. I think some people are going to bounce off it because it is being a bit opaque and like deliberately not holding your hand. And if your frustration threshold might be a bit lower, you might not get on board with it. And also, I like it because I do quite like the whole Lovecraftian Cthulhu thing about the, terror that lies underneath the surface of everything and the weird existential dread and all that business. And this game's tapping into that. And you are uncovering things and there's a lot of flavor text which is describing stuff. And it's interesting to have a button which is based around like a mechanic in the game, which is clear my mind. And it's up to you what you drag onto that button to say, how are you going to clear your mind? Are you going to clear it with reason? Are you going to clear it with thinking about the future? Are you going to clear it with a study on dread? And how is that going to affect your psychological makeup and what happens and what cards it produces? So there's a lot of weird stuff going on there. And this is only from me playing it for like an hour, hour and a half. So I've only scratched the surface. And it's an odd one.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. I may well play more.
Is it a premium game or is it free to play?
Yes, it is. It is a premium game. Let me see. Yeah. Actually, now that it's out, I'm looking for money. Let's have a look. £4.99
okay.
or $4.99 for that one. Currently riding high in the charts there. But again, it got BAFTA nominations as well.
Oh.
Last year. I didn't know. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't think it's for everyone. But we'll play more. We'll do our review and we'll see how that goes. But Cultist Simulator is the name of that one. We've also got, what is it? Arena Stars is the other one that I've played this week. This is very much Clash Royale on first glance, a sort of side-on one. But actually, there's a bunch of different things going on here. So rather than you taking control of a massive cast of characters, it's got that slightly hero element to it, where you have one character you can actually move around the screen. So you spawn from this big colored battle tank at the beginning of the game, or at least your characters do, and you can waddle them across in order to fight one another and fight the main base at the end. There are no towers or anything like that. You've just got that big main base and your other characters. You need to kill the opponent's hero character 3 times and that's it. You've won the game. And you can also smash down their base as well if you want to take them out. Cards are at the bottom of the screen and mana generates over time. Standard, you know, Hearthstone, Clash Royale business. I guess the only real difference is that you've got some special powers that you use on the right-hand side of the screen that your hero has.
Okay.
These charge over time. You don't need to wait for mana or anything. Each one has their own cooldown on it, and they unlock more as you play through the game. You wind up with 3 in total. And you can, as you play through the game and start winning battles, expand your deck. So you start winning more cards, upgrading the ones you already have, unlocking additional hero cards as well, and then you can start switching out your teams and play quite differently. It's all right. I quite like the presentation. It looks very different and does feel quite different to the Clash Royale thing. But it feels quite pacey. There's a speed to it, which is good in these games. Animation style is quite nice. And the ability to move your character around and deliberately attack the opponent's hero or start messing with their minions or move over and start attacking just their main base while you're constantly spawning other creatures in the background. That's quite fun, just to kind of, you know, you're switching between this hero character play and then just general spawning and letting the creatures do their own thing. And yeah, then it becomes tactical as to what creatures do you spawn when to counter the creatures that they've spawned. So nothing particularly new, but it does feel slightly different from the other ones. I'd be surprised if it got huge amounts of traction, but I've played a lot worse when it comes to these kind of games. So maybe worth a look. But Arena Stars is the name of that one. That's most of the new releases. You've been attached to some cooking game for the past couple of weeks, haven't you?
It's not a cooking game. So it's called Bacon, the game.
Okay.
It's done quite well with acclaim and awards and stuff like that. It won the Guilty Pleasure Award at the Mobile Game Awards at GDC a couple of weeks ago. So the premise of the game, it's so stupid, but I can't stop playing. It's a real problem. You basically, you're controlling a frying pan and you're just flipping the bacon onto lots of different objects. So you'll start off with just like, it could be anything, just like salad or toast or anything. And then it just gets mad and it just, next thing you're flipping it onto Kevin Bacon and then Francis Bacon, the artist. It's very creative though, because you'll be flipping for ages trying to get it on like those stuff like Sphinx, which you maybe can't position the bacon on properly. It sounds terrible.
Stuff like what?
I'm making it sound terrible, but it's really addictive how you're just flipping the bacon onto completely different objects, but it's how they keep changing up. So about halfway through, because a level can take you anything between 2 seconds to 5 minutes, basically, if you keep going, just because some of them are flat surfaces. But you'll get halfway through, and one of them is the creator's Twitter bio, and he basically tweeted out saying, hey, comment on this and this will be in the game. So you're like flipping bacon onto comments people have done, which is quite clever. It's a weird game, but it is a guilty pleasure. And I've got nothing done. Like my girlfriend went for a run recently. I was like, I'll get loads of stuff done. I'll do some housework and everything. She came back about an hour later and I was just still playing, laying on my bed. And she was just silently judging me, just going, what are you doing with your life? Like,
Fair enough. I guess I'd have to take a look.
Yeah, it is.
I feel like it's something you need to experience.
Definitely. It is mad, but it's hilarious because every time you do actually land the bacon onto whatever object, you'll just get an orchestral theme just playing in the background like it's the greatest accomplishment in mankind.
Oh, nice. What's it called?
Bacon the game.
Just bacon just the bacon game. All right, game. Fine.
But yeah, it is free to play, yeah.
That's the Ron Seal thing. I can respect it. So fair enough. Take a look at that one if you're interested. That'll do for this week, I think. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week in one form or another. Plenty of new games to be getting on with this week, so lots of good stuff for you to choose from. You can follow us, the actual site, on Twitter and all that business. We are obviously at Pocket Gamer. There's a YouTube channel, which is Pocket Gamer as well. Matthew, you've got a Twitter handle as well. What's that one?
Yeah, so people can follow me at 4D999, so F-O-R-D-E-999. And that's all my gamer handles and everything as well.
Nice. Mine's up anywhere, but it's metal_slag, I think, is it? But I never use Twitter, so don't worry about it. Anyway, see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.